Paley News Center. Actor Charles Nelson Reilly died Friday in Los Angeles at the age of 76 from complications of pneumonia. The New York Times reports that Reilly had been ill for over a year. A character actor on Broadway, Reilly won a Tony Award in 1962 for his portrayal of Bud Frump and how to succeed in business without really trying. He also appeared in many TV shows. It's been 30 years since Star Wars came to a theater near you and changed the way movies are not only made but marketed, with hundreds of thousands of toys and collectibles. To mark the occasion, Celebration 4 is going on right now in downtown Los Angeles. Lucasfilm's Steve Sansweet says there will be a lot of authentic merchandise to bid on.
We have silent and live charity auctions. All the money goes to Make-A-Wish with some vintage Star Wars merchandise not to be missed.
Southland weather for your Memorial Day. Highs in the lower 70s. Right now at 61 in Santa Ana, 58 in San Clemente. At 12:01, I'm Lisa Hart, News Talk 870, KRLA, just right.
Kevin James here. I know I've arrived when Dennis Miller is my opening act. Join me as I launch my new show tonight at 9, right here on News Talk 870, KRLA.
Info to go on News Talk 870 KRLA.
The Music Center Speaker Series and presenting sponsor City National Bank invite you to experience eclectic and thought-provoking evenings in downtown Los Angeles. The series comes to an end with Bob Woodward Friday, June 8th, 8 p.m. at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. This is your last chance to be a part of the discussion. For your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Bob Woodward, go to KRLA870.com. That's KRLA870.com.
What's going to be the next nasty trick from the liberals and the Democrats who control Congress? And who's going to come out on top in the Republican and Democratic presidential primaries? This is Michael Medved for townhall.com. Now, after you listen to my show, get even more of what's happening in politics, pop culture, and the media. You'll find analysis and opinion from the brightest minds in the country, including mine, of course. And townhall.com has blogs from across America, thousands of them, including mine, every day. Check out the podcast, too. It's where your opinion counts. This radio station and townhall.com.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Are you thinking about getting a piano? If you answered yes, here's the information you need to find the right piano and save you lots of money, too. Visit Keyboard Concepts and David L. Abel Fine Pianos, Southern California's places to go for quality new or used pianos, digital pianos, or disc player pianos. Choose from absolutely the finest pianos in each price range and category, including all the Yamaha pianos recommended first by teachers, tuners, and pros alike. Play the magnificent Burzendorfer, the world's finest, as well as the very affordable Pearl Rivers from the world's largest piano factory. The Yamaha Disclavier disc players and the digital Clavinovas, which I own, have no competition. Lots of used Steinways and others in stock now. Keyboard Concepts and David L. Abel Fine Pianos. There are no going out of business sales here, just guaranteed low prices 7 days a week. Visit their convenient freeway close locations in L.A., West L.A., Van Nuys in the Valley, and 1000 Oaks, Ventura County. For information and directions, 800-22-PIANO.
Lower your mortgage payments and pay off high-interest credit cards. Sure, everybody offers that, but we deliver, whatever your credit score. I'm Jeff Siegel, president of Community Lending Group. We'll help you realign your finances, lower your mortgage payments, get rid of credit card bills, and we'll do it by phone, fax, and email. Easy. Call us at 800-95-LOANS.
Your lender for life, Community Lending Group, for all of Southern California. 800-95-LOANS. Licensed by the DRE.
Imagine no credit card bills. Call us. 800-95-LOANS.
Dear Mama, my first 5 years, I'll learn a lot.
How to walk, talk, brush my teeth.
But for food, I'm pretty much counting on you.
I don't know what's good for me.
I can't use the stove, drive to the store. It's up to you.
So if you need help, there's WIC.
WIC, Women, Infants, Children.
They'll tell you what's good for me, even provide food. Because what I eat my first 5 years will affect me the rest of my life.
Love always, your child.
Get proper nutrition before it's too late. Call or visit WIC. WIC provides nutrition information, healthcare referrals, even food for women, infants, children. To find out more about WIC, our nearest location, or if you qualify for our benefits, call 1-866-WIC-INFO.
P.S. It doesn't cost anything.
Your child has you, and you have WIC. Brought to you by the National WIC Association and the Ag Council.
Dennis Prager, 9 to noon. News Talk 870, KRLA.
Just right.
The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff or management of News Talk 870, KRLA. This is Champions of Justice with attorney Thomas Girardi and attorney Howard Miller. This is the program that takes you behind the scenes with those who make the laws and those who protect your rights through the rule of law. I'm Dave Dino. Thomas Girardi is the founding partner of the law firm of Girardi & Keyes, known for passionate litigation of corporate giants on behalf of aggrieved individuals. Howard Miller is a member of Girardi & Keyes and a member of the Board of Governors of the State Bar of California. They are champions of justice for the little guy. Each week, Tom and Howard host this informative and entertaining hour, bringing new insight to the headline-generating legal challenges of the day. Today, our guest was elected as mayor of Los Angeles on May 17, 2005, sworn into office on July 1, 2005. Known for his exceptional skill at building broad bipartisan coalitions, and is considered one of the leading progressive voices in the United States. He has earned a reputation as a national leader for his bold programs to address education, public safety, transportation, and other issues facing Los Angeles. He was named one of America's best leaders by U.S. News and World Report, and has been featured on the cover of Newsweek and L.A. Magazine, and named one of the 25 most influential Latinos by Time Magazine. If we were to cover his pedigree and his background, that in and of itself would take the entire program. So, Tom, I think we have indicated sort of the here and now, and you get to talk about the future in introducing our guest.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for being with us again. Well, Dave Dino, we finally did it.
It's about time.
It's about time. We've had Justice Carlos Moreno of the Supreme Court, Mr. Mayor. We've had five justices of the Supreme Court on the show. We've had the presiding judge. We've had some great lawyers. But finally, Dave Dino, we got the kahuna.
Yeah, all a mere warm-up to today.
Exactly. You know, let me tell you something. I've known this man for a long time. Mm. I'm very proud to say that he's not just a friend, he's a dear friend. And to have watched what he has done, first of all in the legislature where he was speaker, he had the ability as speaker to get people together. It wasn't near the bickering that we see in Washington with the lack of success that we see in Washington. The mayor had the ability to go on both sides of the aisle, forge coalitions, have everybody reasonably pleased with the end result. Then, when that tour of duty was over, he decided that maybe he could help Los Angeles. In all honesty, I think the mayor of Los Angeles is a million times harder than the legislature. The problems are bigger, the solutions are harder to find, and indeed, to take on this sort of a situation, I didn't think when we talked before he ran, it was necessarily in his best interest. I said, the problems are so great. I also said, you know, it'd be hard, I think, I said this, you remember this, at the Pacific Dining Car. I said, I don't think you'll win. And we have to have you in public office. And the current mayor is well-regarded and so forth. And Antonio took my advice.
For how many hours?
For about 5 hours. He called me the next morning and said, Girardi, you're nuts. I'm running for mayor, gosh darn it. Now then, and here's what's happened since that time. Since that time, there has never been a mayor who has gone to more events than this mayor. And they could be charitable events. They could be events for certain segments of society. Wherever there is an event, somehow he does his best to be there.
I see him every year at the Thanksgiving meal for the Salvation Army. I don't see him making an appearance. What I see him doing is putting on an apron, grabbing a tray full of meals, and he gets out and he serves the meals, and he does so delightfully. Just like that. See, he's got that practice.
You know what? Some of the things he's done as mayor are somewhat controversial. But let me say this. We know that certain things that have happened in the past are not helping the city. This man said, hey, we're going to do other things, mm-hmm. and we're going to see what we can do. So, Mr. Mayor, it's extraordinary of you to come. I know you have a million things to do. I know your time is massively tight. And for you to have carved this out for us to appear here in Champions means an awful lot to me. I really mean that sincerely. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom, Howard, and Dave. And let me just say to the three of you, when you think about Champions of Justice and why it's so important for us to talk about this whole idea of access to justice, you know, the idea that in our society, no matter if you're rich or poor, white or black, that you have, through the court system, the opportunity to remediate wrongs, to speak truth to power, to challenge those who violate our rights or injure us in some way, and say there's a need for compensation and remediation. And whether it's the issue of the environment, civil rights, the issue of consumer issues, these are issues that you litigate and represent in a way that I think is very important. So I'm glad to be here and ready to get right into it.
Okay, we're gonna put you right on the old frying pan here, Mr. Mayor.
We like the frying pan from time to time. Just don't put me in the fire. How about that?
Okay, what's going on with the school stuff?
Well, let me just say.
Why don't you bring us up to date?
Let me just say, from the very beginning, I said that I believe, like New York, Chicago, Cleveland, Boston, mayors and cities need to be involved in our school district. Think about this. If the pillar of a neighborhood is a neighborhood public school, and we know that because when you go buy a home, one of the things you ask the realtor is, what's the school like? Even if you don't have kids there, because you know that the quality of the schools has a lot to do with the value of the homes. So if that's true for a neighborhood, that's equally true for a city. A great city, the world's the portal to the east and the south, the entertainment capital of not just the United States but the world, the situs of the more jobs, 450,000 jobs in the creative economy, 450,000 jobs in trade and tourism. This is the place where we've got to focus on our schools and ensure that people have the skills that they need. So we got involved in legislation because we knew we needed legislation to give the mayor a formal role in our schools. We passed that on a bipartisan basis. The governor was there, Speaker Nunez, Senator Gloria Romero, Senate Pro Tem Don Parada, all working together. We passed it. Notwithstanding that, the courts overruled it, overturned it rather, in the trial court and then in the Court of Appeals. So what we said was we went to the legislature, now we're going to the ballot box. We helped to elect four members of the school board, people who are committed to reform, change agents who really want to partner with the mayor and the school district. And we're very excited about that. Look, at the end of the day, the key to turning around our schools is empowering parents and teachers, giving them a voice. With smaller schools, safer schools, we've got to address the need for innovation. So we support charter schools, and I think you're going to see a lot more than that. We're trying to create a partnership, the teachers union, who are going to be involved, the mayor, the school board, but also parents. I'm going to organize, help to organize anyways. We already have 5,000. Our goal is to have a half a million parents who are involved in our schools and a parent union. Because what I've said is everybody deserves a union, and let's give the parents an organization that will speak for them and their kids. So we're excited about it. Just today, Tom, Howard, and Dave, when you talk about a new partnership, when I first got elected as mayor, I saw that we were only doing 2,500 summer youth jobs, and New York was doing 40,000. So our first goal in the first year was 5,000 summer youth jobs. We surpassed it. We did 7,500 summer youth jobs. So this year, the goal was 10,000. We got together with the school district 3 days after agreeing to come together and work on this issue reform, and they've agreed to do 3,000. So we're going to do 13,000 summer youth jobs this year. 2 years ago, 2,500. The kind of example of things that we got to do. Because when you talk about dropout rates, you've got to create jobs and give kids skills, but also create efforts to keep them in school. We've got a learn and earn program as part of our Hire Youth LA, where we help the kids with the Princeton Review to pass the high school exit exam in the morning, and then in the afternoon we give them a job.
This is so great. I have to tell you, Tom, beyond what the mayor is talking about, he deserves the most enormous credit. This is the most difficult domestic policy issue in the United States, and political figures do not usually gain success. It's a high-risk venture. Until Mayor Reardon, no mayor of L.A. had attempted to play a prominent role in education. Mayor Villaraigosa has done more than anyone else. He's doing it out of conviction. He's doing it because he knows how important it is for the kids to be educated. This is not out of political calculation. Political calculation is for a mayor to stay away from education.
You know what?
He deserves the greatest credit for getting involved.
No question about it. This isn't something that somebody is doing because I can get a larger political constituency out there.
I can tell you about that.
Yeah, this is that's right. This is something somebody is doing from the heart. You know, Mr. Mayor, California, under Edmund G. Brown Sr., when he was governor, California was number two in education. California now is 48th in education. And it seems many of our other guests on the show, from Sheriff Lee Baca to the United States Attorney Deborah Yang, talking about gangs and so on, they say, wow, you know, the gangs start because the kids drop out of school. If kids stay in school, and this little program you have, the youth program to see what's going on in the industrial world, is massively important. Our little law firm, we have five students each semester from Bourbon Day down in central L.A.
It's great.
Each works one day a week and comes to the firm. They get paid a modest sum for it.
All come in jackets and ties, all come ready to go to work.
And we don't just have them file papers. They go to court with us. They see the law in action. They see problem solving in action. They see a victim that we're trying to help, you know, who's been harmed or those sorts of things. Every one of our kids in Bourbon Day is in college or has graduated from college. Now, this, of course, isn't many people. We're not talking about many people. We're talking about 10 kids basically a year. But every single one of them have gone on. And I think the exposure to the workplace and see that there are great things out there that you can do has been important for each one of those kids. At least they say it is.
I'd like to ask some of the lawyers and the law firms who are listening to this program right now to participate with you in this effort. Our Hire LA program for youth is going into full swing this summer, and if you can hire a high school student in the summer, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10, 25, whatever it is, please call 311 and they'll get you involved in the effort. Every employer has a responsibility to participate in efforts like this. It's a way for the private sector to partner with the city, but importantly, to provide an opportunity for a young person who otherwise wouldn't have it.
And the confidence it gives the kids. I mean, one of the great lessons here that we have to get in the school system is that with very few exceptions, and I mean maybe only 1 or 2%, every kid can learn and succeed. And so many kids have been hurt by what George Bush you know, I think a phrase, whatever you think of him politically, was accurate. The soft bigotry of low expectations. So many kids have been hurt by that. And all these kids can learn and can succeed. And it's not their fault if they don't. It's the fault of the school system and the people who are running it.
You're listening to Champions of Justice with your host, Tom Girardi, and Howard Miller. Our guest today is Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Tom?
The problems in the schools, Mr. Mayor, are not limited, though, to kids dropping out, although that's a huge problem. Safety is a huge issue. And, you know, we see these things that are happening out there that we were talking right before you got here today that none of those problems were around the vandalism at Garfield, for example, or guns that kids were bringing guns to school and so on. None of those were around in Howard and my lifetime of going to school. But, you know, there's some real issues there. What are you going to do about it?
Which was before the WW1, right?
What we can say for sure is that it wasn't the 19th century.
Oh, there go all the soft questions.
Just kidding. There go all the soft questions. No, let me just say, you know, and I could say the same thing. I mean, obviously there was violence in our schools and probably has been from the very beginning, but not on the scale, and not the carnage you see at a Columbine. That you have witnessed just last year with three individuals, young students killed at or very close by a high school in LAUSD. And so we have got to partner with our schools, and we've done that. But we also got to teach kids and families about violence prevention, about mediation, right after some of the conflict that occurred at Jefferson High School, if you remember, what I did is I put together an effort with 300 young kids, peer assistants, mediation counselors, kids who are working together with each other to stymie the violence, to give kids alternatives to violence, to, you know, talk through conflict instead of engaging in violent activity. And it's a struggle because we live at a time when there's too much wanton violence, not just on our high school campuses, on our college campuses, with what, you know, the carnage of and the tragedy of Virginia Tech, with you know, the fact that all around the country too many people die at the hands of violence, especially gun and gang violence.
Mr. Mayor, I've mentioned on the show before, it's important to know that these problems can be fixed. My youngest son is a vice principal and teacher in a charter school in San Francisco. The requirements for admission are that you had to have come out of the California Youth Authority. If you haven't committed a crime, you can't get admitted. They have 60 or 70 kids in the school on any given basis. They've sent 26 kids to San Francisco State College. I mean, you can, and some to private schools. If you have the resources and attention, you can turn these lives around. That's the lesson I've learned from what my son has done.
Well, but wait, can I just say, not to butter you up, but what a great young man he is. I mean, people who go into teaching, there's no more noble profession, but particularly people who are willing to teach the hardest to reach young people. You know, too often we give up on these kids. And I tell people my life is a metaphor for redemption. I wasn't always on the straight and narrow path. I never really gotten a lot of trouble, but I was a high school dropout for a period of time. And, you know, somebody gave me a second chance, and public school system gave me the opportunity to go on to college and law school after that. And I tell people the fact that I can read and write is the biggest reason why I'm here today. And we want to make sure that more of our kids can read and write, are going on to college, have the skills that they need. You know, it starts, and I think your son will tell you, with high expectations. You know, you said something, and I've actually quoted President Bush on that issue, too. I don't quote him very often, I will admit, but I do quote him on that issue when he talks about the soft bigotry of low expectations. Some of the best people will tell you, well, these kids don't learn because they're poor, because their parents didn't have a college education, because they're English language learners, because they come from foster homes, you know, a thousand reasons. Yeah. And I've been in churches in South L.A. or the East Side where I've said, how many of you fit under one of those categories. And they'll raise their hand.
Yeah, right.
And then I'll say, how many of you can read and write? I graduated from high school. We can't give up on kids because they had a tough background, because we know that if we give them love and support and high expectations and accountability and responsibility, if we push them, if we give them the resources, many of them, if not all of them, as you said, can make it. And that's really the raison d'etre behind our efforts. It's this idea, let's get away from low expectations to high expectations for our kids. If you demand excellence, people will almost always, you know, strive to meet that goal.
I can't tell you how critical my time LAUSD and in education, the number of distinguished senior people in public education who would say to me, you know, we really can't teach these kids. And I would say, you know, when they fail, we fail. It's the system that fails. We can teach these kids. And they'd look at me and say, you're just an educational primitive. You don't understand. We've got to change that level and have people convinced that it's the people who teach and lead that bear the responsibility for failure, not the kids.
You're listening to Champions of Justice. Sorry, Tom.
And, I'm sorry, Dave.
I want to make sure everybody knows who they're listening to.
That's right. Exactly.
That is Thomas Girardi right there that you're listening to, along with Howard Miller, our hosts. And our guest today is Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Tom?
You know what, though, Mayor? This isn't just let's show the way to these young people, blah, blah, blah. The downside of this is massive. If we don't get these kids educated, if we don't get these kids with goals in life, your gang problem, which I guess it has a current population of about 39,000 in Los Angeles, although that's down, I guess, from what it was, but nonetheless, thousands and thousands of people in these gangs, that's where they're going to go if we don't get them there.
So true, Tom. You know, it's funny because I've seen written and heard people say, well, last year, Antonio Villaraigosa's number one priority was education. This year, it's gangs, and starting next year, it's going to be climate change. And I said, hold it. First of all, you know, when you're mayor of a city like this, you have to have a lot of priorities, and you have to address a broad range of issues. Let me be absolutely clear about that. Second of all, the relationship between education and the dropout rate particularly, but education, ability to read and write, hope that comes, springs eternal from that ability to read and write and have those skills, and gangs and poverty, public safety, they're just all connected. You know, we wonder why not enough people are voting. Well, you know, not enough people can read and write in this town. We wonder why there's a rise in gang crime. Well, too many of our kids are dropping out. 75% of the people in prisons today are either high school dropouts or can't read and write. There's a connection between schools, public safety, gangs, very importantly, poverty, job competitiveness, you know, formed citizenry. It's related to just about everything you think.
It all starts with education.
It all starts with education.
What about the whole area, and you touched on this a moment ago, and perhaps can expand on it a little bit, and that is the whole role of parents. I mean, we're talking about providing better success in school and the eradication of gangs. Where does the responsibility lie with the parents?
Dave, that's a very important issue. You know, it's funny. I tell people, and Tom mentioned my abilities over the years to work on a bipartisan basis. Mm-hmm. I also feel very strongly that too often the left and the right are talking at one another, and they throw out simple solutions mm-hmm. that most, you know, they deal in the black and white and not in the gray. And so much of the world, as two trial lawyers sitting here next to me can tell you, has a lot of gray in it. It's not black and white. And I can tell you, my mother worked her whole life, single mom, rode a bus her whole life. She took care of four kids. She made it to our PTA meetings. She insisted that we do our homework. She pushed her kids to go to college and emphasized, you know, an education. She understood she had a responsibility. Parents have a responsibility, too. And one of the things we want to do, even in our public schools, you can't force parents to do X or Y, but we want to put together parent compacts that say these are the responsibilities of parenthood when you have kids in our public schools. Mm-hmm. The responsibility to go over their homework, the responsibility to attend meetings when called on by the administration regarding your kids' academic success or failure or their disciplinary issues, the responsibility of parents to provide a learning environment for their kids. You know, that's an important issue. And people have said, well, why would you do a parent compact? You can't force them to do it. No, you can't. But you could start to create a culture of responsibility. And I'm a big believer in personal responsibility. I don't think it's just the government or the mayor or the teachers union or teachers. You know, it's everybody working together. And I'm glad you asked that question because I think a key to any reform, the first teacher is a parent. And make no mistake about that.
You know what, though, Antonio? I think there are a lot of parents out there that don't know what they're supposed to do with respect to the kids going to school.
Oh, that's so true, Tom. You know, when we were working on the building program at LAUSD, and I went down. We announced a meeting in Southgate one evening to talk about new high school in Southgate. They hadn't had one in 40 or 50 years. 1,000 parents showed up at the meeting. It was just posted as flyers. Parents are deeply committed to their kids' education. And as Tom says, they need guidance in how to be involved and how to have their impact on the schools.
Well, that's why I'm going to spend a lot of time in the coming year. People said, well, you know, Mayor, okay, you're passionate about education. We all get that. You put your job on the line. You've raised, you know, incredible sums of money to help elect four reform members of the board. But what happens when you're gone? And I said, I'll tell you what happens when we're gone. We're going to institutionalize this reform effort by organizing parents. As I said, that's a very, very important next challenge because you're right. There are a lot of parents that want to be involved. They don't always know how to do it. They haven't often been welcomed. What we're saying is in every school there should be a parent resource center, parent coordinators working with parents to empower them, to let them know what their rights and their responsibilities are, and to get them involved in their kids' education.
But you've also changed the rules of the game. I don't think anyone will ever again be able to run for mayor of Los Angeles without indicating how that candidate will be involved in education. I don't think we will ever again be able to have a mayor who says that's not within the mayor's responsibilities. You know, you've really changed that.
You know, it's funny because the first thing I did, and what mayors have, since Tom Bradley have done, every mayor has done it, I raised $7 million at my inaugural ball, if you will, for LA's Best, an after-school program. And that's about where, you know, mayors have been involved with the after-school program, LA's Best. We've gone far beyond that. And as you said, from now on, if you want to be mayor of this town, you better have an agenda that addresses the need for us to reform and make our schools places of excellence.
Has this idea of yours of involving the parents and so has this ever been done before?
It has, but nowhere on the scale that we intend to make it happen here. From the very beginning, I understood, Tom, and maybe it's because I come out of the civil rights movement and the labor movement before that. I understood that, you know, individuals really don't make history. You know, organizations, people with, you know, with organizations do. So we're very focused on, you know, really having a bottom-up, not just a top-down reform movement. Because when it's bottom-up, you really have something that will last over time and last over, you know, the individual mayor, whoever that person is. So, yes, there are other places where it's occurred, but not on the scale that it's going to occur here.
Are you happy?
I'm excited. I love this job. I'm like a pig in a poke.
Do you love this job?
What do you think?
No,
I'm wearing an orange tie just like you right now. I got a big smile on my face.
Exactly.
And I couldn't be happier and prouder to be a mayor of this town. You've heard me say 100 times. I was born and raised here. My mother was born here. My grandpa got here 100 years ago from Mexico. He came with a dream. And his kids and his grandkids and his great-grandkids have been very blessed by the dream that is Los Angeles. And I just having a great time, couldn't be happier, you know. And that's true even though it's not all good times, as we know, reading the papers and watching TV.
You mean you actually get criticized once
in a while? Yeah, once in a while. Sometimes more than I'd like. But
Howard and I even lose a case now and then.
Yeah,
I want you to know that.
Every once in a while.
Tom, don't give that away.
So, but it's clear you're having more fun than you've ever had. I knew you as when you were the speaker, obviously, up there in Sacramento, and I think you enjoyed that. But you're getting a kick out of this job like no one before you has ever gotten such a kick.
I can't say that, but I will say this. I love what I do. You said I make a lot of events, and that's important. I go to every part of the city, and I tell people if there's a strength I have is that in the morning I could be in Jordan Downs or Ramona Gardens, two housing projects in South and East Los Angeles. Later that day I could be with a large group of Armenians or Persians in the San Fernando Valley, go back with environmentalists, in the west side, and then a big event somewhere, with the richest people in this town. And if you want to be mayor of a town like this, you got to touch people. They don't want to just see you on TV. They want to see you in their neighborhood. They want to see you rolling up your sleeves and fixing problems. And that may be on a fire line or a police line. It may be at a library. It may be at a children's health fair. But being present, probably for more than any other job in political life, is critical to being a mayor.
Being a mayor is a people job.
Yeah, it's a people job. People say that, he's in the community, obviously you thought it was a good thing, but there are people who don't like it, and they say he should be in his office more. Well, first of all, you want to see how many hours I'm in my office. come with me to my office, and you'll see I spend a lot of time there too. But I don't believe that the job of the mayor is to be in the office. The job of the mayor is to be in the neighborhoods of this city, because otherwise what happens is all you get in terms of input is the input of the people around you, who are usually going to want to give you good news. When you go into the neighborhoods, you get bad news too. And don't get me wrong, nobody likes getting buttonholed and having somebody scream at you or complain, but you get a sense for what people are hearing and thinking and saying, what their needs are. So it's very important to be in every neighborhood, and not just in the wealthy neighborhoods, the poor neighborhoods, the black or Latino neighborhoods, but in every part of the city. You know what's beautiful about this town? 46% of the city is foreign born. 36% of the city, a lot of people think because half the city is Latino, they think that, that we just have a large concentration of Latinos here. But we have 36 different nationalities that have the largest population here outside of the country of origin. That's Iranians, that's Armenians, that's Koreans, that's Israelis, that's Mexicans, that's Salvadorans, that's Guatemalans, that's Koreans. I mean, the list goes on. Filipinos, rather. I mean, the list goes on and on. And your ability to connect in all of those communities goes a long way to kind of keeping us cohesive.
You're listening to Champions of Justice. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Howard Miller, and the familiar voice you are listening to is that of Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. We touched on the issue of gangs. One of your specific goals is to dismantle the 204th Street Gang of Torrance, and gang crime was up 14% citywide and nearly 25% in South Los Angeles. The 204th Street and East Side Torrance gangs have contributed to the rise in racially motivated murders and other crimes. We tend to think of gangs as entirely crime-oriented, but there are deep-rooted communal and even familial aspects of gang activity. How do you go about dismantling a gang?
Well, first of all, we've put together a strategic effort to deal with hot spots in the city. That's one. You've got to be smart with the resources. We're the most under-policed big city in America. Mm-hmm. Last year, we passed a trash fee hike for the purpose of dealing with budget holes that would give us the opportunity to hire 1,000 new cops in the next 4 years. We're on track to do that. Later this year, we'll have more police officers, 9,500, than at any time in LA history.
And still, though, that's woefully...
It's woefully too low for the number of people. Just to give you an example, Chicago has 1 million less people, much smaller area to police. They have about 5,000 more police officers than we do. So that's one. But what I say is, in addition to suppression, you're never going to dismantle gangs until you deal with poverty, until you deal with family preservation, until you deal with some of the ancillary impacts of those issues. You're just not. So that means you got to have prevention and intervention. You got to invest in kids. That means you got to focus on education. You got to give kids the skills that they need for the jobs of the future. Otherwise, you know, someone said to me, it was a really poignant remark, and I think fitting. He said, if you just deal with suppression, with gangs, it's like cutting the grass. You know, as soon as you cut the grass will grow right back. You got to fertilize it. You got to feed. You got to water the lawn. You got to trim and prune the vegetation. And that means we've got to invest in kids. You know, it's too easy for us to demonize these kids and incarcerate them. And what we've seen is since 1994, when I became a member of the legislature, 1994, we had about 72,000 people in prison. Today, we have more than 170,000 in prison. We incarcerate more people than any nation in the world except for South Africa on a per capita basis, than any nation in the world except for South Africa, Russia, and China. Not three countries that, you know, we want to compare ourselves to. So we've got to invest in people, too. Got to hold them accountable. Don't get me wrong. If you break the law, you got to, there are consequences for it. That those consequences got to be proportional. But if we're going to be smart and address gang crime, we also got to invest in people. Put together an effort to coordinate our gang efforts, prevention and intervention. We're going to be hiring somebody who's going to coordinate that. I don't like the word czar, but somebody who will be a youth and gang development individual who will focus, well, not gang development, youth development and gang leader who will kind of coordinate our efforts across the board to strategically address this issue.
I was at a fundraising event of people who were prior gang members who've been injured. And they've obviously, they're no longer in the gang and so forth, but their injuries were terrible. Their injuries were spinal cord injuries and so forth. And to see over the Century Hotel, to see all these young people in wheelchairs, all the result of gang violence, you'd say to them, my God, look at this. Look at this devastation that's taken place. And obviously you didn't have all of them there, but you had a representative sample of maybe 400 or 500 kids massively harmed in wheelchairs or crutches that'll be that way the rest of their life, all because of this gang violence.
You know, Tom, Howard, Dave, yesterday I went to an event for Women Against Gun Violence, and a very important organization that deals with this whole issue of the need for us to legislate and control the proliferation of guns and assault weapons in our cities, especially here in California. It was very sobering because I walked into the event and three women approached me and they said they wanted to take a picture. We were taking a picture and they said they were board members. I said, oh, it's nice to meet you. And they said, all three of us are victims of gun violence. And then I left them, took a picture with them, very sobering after you meet three people who have been victimized in that way. And then I met a young man who was in a wheelchair, and given the conversation, I said to him, are you also a victim of gun violence? And he says, yes, I am. He says, but I was responsible. Something like I deserved it because I was in a gang. And I said, hold it. Nobody deserves to be shot. He's now paralyzed from the waist down, but a great young man. He is dedicating his life to going into schools and talking to kids about violence and gangs and really encouraging them to stay out of both. And I'll tell you something, we forget the devastation. When you see a number, you know, 500 people murdered in a year, 42% or 52% committed by gang members, and when you realize that many thousands actually shot and victimized, we forget that with that number is associated a human tragedy and a trauma to a family, an impact to the economy, cost to the public health system. So this issue, as a champion for justice, as I know you are, You know, this issue is a very important issue because, you know, we've really got to do a lot more to address the violence in our society.
And so much of this, you know, you talk about policies, it's all resources also. The mayor talks about the size of the LAPD. That's part of the history of Los Angeles. We've always had the smallest police department in a major urban area because the theory of the Los Angeles Police Department was for many years, after all, the originator of the SWAT teams, you know, it was to move in with overwhelming force, to not rely on large numbers of people. Now you need more community policing. You need more people in working with gangs. The number of people you can train and put into the environment is what gives you the ability to deal with these issues, and that's a resource. It's a money problem. It's not just policies, and it's important to recognize that these things are underfunded. The mayor's in a difficult position on the budget, but the truth of the matter is if you want to deal with these problems, you've got to bring the resources to bear through better trained people and programs, and that's the only way you're going to have a long-term impact, I think.
You know, Mayor, we mentioned law enforcement here. I'm going to change the focus slightly. Law enforcement didn't look very good a couple weeks ago with respect to the march and their reaction to it and so on. We've seen the film clips of MacArthur Park, et cetera, and we've seen some of those reporters and so on that got hurt. However, I want to say the way that the chief and the way you have responded to that has been extraordinary. You know, in the past, there would be problems that took place, and nobody ever wanted to say, hey, we did the wrong thing. We won't do this again. We've learned by this, et cetera. You could look at Rampart. You could look at a whole bunch of areas that all that would happen would be that the elected officials or the chief of police would do everything they could to just put this in the background, cover it up, et cetera. Here, to see our mayor and the chief, too. I think he was equally as good in the point to say, listen, this was a problem. We did the wrong thing. This isn't going to happen again, et cetera. It's a total change in the way elected officials behave in times of crisis, I think.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. Let me say a couple of things about that. First of all, as you well know, the vast majority of the men and women who serve in the LAPD serve with distinction. They put their lives on the line every single day. I can tell you, I've been to the hospital with officers who have been shot, unprovoked, assaulted, and in a way that just is terrifying. Make no mistake about it. Having said that, let's be clear about this, Tom. What happened on May 1st was wrong. It's unacceptable. We are going to investigate because, while yes, it's true, and I appreciate that, as soon as I got back to Los Angeles, I didn't say this was the police chief's responsibility or problem or the police commission. I wasn't here that day. No, I said, I'm responsible. I'm the mayor of this town in the good times, and I'm the mayor of this town in the bad times. Many people said, well, why would you accept responsibility? I said, because that's what you do when you're the chief executive anywhere, in a company, in a business, in a nonprofit. I believe as well, that means, though, those are nice words, but we are defined not by words, but by actions. And so, as I said to the chief, and he wholeheartedly agrees, we absolutely have to investigate this matter with transparency and openness. We have to call him like we see him. You know, there's some who think every police officer engaged in this kind of activity. They're wrong. By the same token, there are people that think that it's okay that officers to engage in some of the conduct that we say. It wasn't every officer, but, you know, some of that conduct was just absolutely unacceptable. So we're going to investigate. We've got to investigate first, obviously. People have their due process rights. Speaking of two lawyers, our justice system, you know, recognizes and respects that. We've got to look at all the facts on the table. We're going to have to address training, command and control. There'll have to be consequences for those who have violated department policy and or the law. And we're going to have to grow and get better from this. Clearly, there are a lot of very important ancillary issues related here. And we're going to have to address culture issues as well, because we can't accept that kind of thing happened again in the future.
And those are the words of the mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa. You're listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Howard Miller.
Okay, public transportation. Tell me about it. What are you doing about it? Is it working? Is it not working? What's your goal, your vision?
We've done some small things. We stopped construction during the rush hour. We put 70 traffic officers at the worst intersections during the rush hour. We have Tiger teams towing cars and trucks parked during the rush hour on Wilshire Boulevard and Ventura Boulevard, two of the most heavily congested thoroughfares in the city of Los Angeles. We're synchronizing our lights all throughout the city with a goal to fully synchronize by the year 2010 at the cost of a few hundred million dollars, by the way. We are have instituted or implemented 188 left-hand turn signals since I've been elected. We're focusing on those small things. We got monies, almost $1 billion for the HOV lane on the 405, the most congested lane freeway in the United States of America. Money for an HOV lane on the 5 in the San Fernando Valley. We were able to secure through the transportation bond when there was zero proposed initially, $4 billion for public transportation, $1 billion for Los Angeles. We're building a light rail line to the east side, a light rail line to the west side on Exposition Boulevard. We're focused on keeping fares down. I'm not supporting the current fare hike that's proposed because we've got to have a system where we're encouraging people to get on public transit, and the best way to encourage it is keep the cost down. We'll be making proposals to, in that regard later on today and tomorrow morning. Having said that, I think we also got to say to every Angeleno, if you want to address gridlock in your town, get out of your car once a week. Get out of your single-passenger automobile. Everybody's looking for someone else to fix the traffic problem.
Every time you drive in one of the high-occupancy vehicle lanes, you're just astonished by the number of cars with only one person in them.
That is so true. And
that's
so,
why those lanes work, is because there's nobody in them.
Yeah.
And the final thing we're doing is we're trying to build out the city in a way that puts housing by transportation corridors, light rail lines, so we build ridership for public transit and also create opportunities for people to live by where they work and they play and shop so that they don't have to be in their car 24/7, 7 days a week.
You know, I love you, Antonio. I asked him a question. Okay, what about transportation? He said, well, we're doing just a few little things. And then those were the few little things.
Billions of dollars later, this
is
where we are.
No, good for you. Good for you. The economy, that's a constant battle, huh?
It really is. Our future is trade and tourism. When you see me in China, in Japan, in Korea, in Mexico, in El Salvador, let's understand those five countries together provide an engine for the LA economy. 455,000 jobs in trade and tourism. We're the portal to the east and the south. We move 43% of all the seaborne goods. Our focus on creating more investment, more trade, more tourism in those countries. Those are the five countries that provide the biggest amount of trade and tourism. Also, biomed and biotech using our universities, UCLA, SC, Caltech. We've got to focus on the green economy as we're cleaning up our environment, engaging climate change efforts. We're gonna go to 30%, 35% by the year 2030. Reduce our carbon footprint here in Los Angeles. A million new trees. We're going to 20% renewables by the year 2010. That means green power. There's a whole economy related to that that we want to generate in the coming years.
Mayor, can I ask you in terms of that about LAX? I mean, LAX now only basically continues to function because people avoid it. What are we doing? It's not a very successful
airport. We've got to regionalize our airport. We've got to modernize it. We're modernizing Tom Bradley, the international terminal. We just realigned the southern runway. We're putting together the resources to modernize it, but also spread out that traffic to Ontario and to Palmdale. It takes time in Mexico. We've got a commitment and also in Asia, commitment to fly from one of the major airlines in both countries to fly to Ontario. We've got to divert more to Ontario, a brand new airport, by the way, one that will grow and that has support in the community to grow because we can't have all our traffic at LAX.
Mr. Mayor Antonio, you're a remarkable human being. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. To sit here in this hour and just to go over the problems that are there and the way that you're addressing them is extraordinary. I don't know if you're going to be successful in every single one of them, but, man, you're going to go down fighting.
I'm going to go down fighting.
I know.
That's right.
I love you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, guys.
You may even go up fighting. You may succeed
right.
at these things.
That's exactly right.
You've been listening to Champions of Justice. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Howard Miller. Our guest today, Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. The program today is produced by Jennifer Lenz. And a final word from Carl Sandburg that I think applies to our guest today. Three very familiar words when we relate his name, I See America. And he said, I see America not in the setting sun of a black night of despair ahead of us. I see America in the crimson light of a rising sun, fresh from the burning creative hand of God. I see great days ahead, great days possible to men and women of will and vision. Our guest today is a man of will and vision, and he is that for the people, so that the people receive justice. And because of that, he is indeed a champion of justice. For Tom and Howard, I'm Dave Dino. Thank you for listening. Join us again next week. Bye-bye now.
We are the champions. We are the champions.
The proceeding was a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff or management of News Talk 870 KRLA.
Are you worried about your health? Since 1971, Lindora has helped people achieve their weight loss goals, lower their cholesterol, and reduce other preventable diseases. Hundreds of thousands of people have become lean for life with Lindora. Whether you want to lose 10, 50, 100 pounds or more, the experts at Lindora can help you lose weight and help you keep it off. So if you're fed up and frustrated with diet programs that don't work, or you just want to feel healthier, call Lindora now. 1-800-LINDORA. 800-LINDORA.
Want a great used car, truck, SUV, or van? Get to S&J Chevrolet in the giant Cerritos Auto Square. Right now, S&J has low prices on all GM-certified pre-owned vehicles and low-rate special financing. Each GM-certified vehicle goes through a rigorous 100-point inspection to guarantee it's solid and reliable. Experience the difference buying from a family-owned dealer that's been treating customers like family since 1937. S&J Chevrolet in the Cerritos Auto Square off the 605 Freeway South Street exit. S&J Chevrolet, an American revolution.
Dennis Prager here talking again about Roger Stewart clothes, among the finest men's clothing you can buy at a fraction of the price of fine men's stores. You might wonder how they can sell a $1,000 suit for $399 at Roger Stewart or a pair of $195 Italian slacks for just $79 at Roger Stewart. Well, Roger travels to Europe to select the fabrics, design the garments, and supervise the manufacturing. Then he arranges for distribution here in America to other fine men's stores. That's right, he makes the suits that a lot of them sell. So you can pay 2 to 3 times more or get the same beautiful suits and slacks from Roger Stewart at manufacturer direct prices. This is where I shop. This is where I bought the suit I wore to the White House to meet the president. Discover Roger Stewart clothes for yourself in the heart of the L.A. Fashion District. Call 877-SUITS-FOR-YOU. That's 877-SUITS, the number 4, the letter U. 877-SUITS-FOR-YOU. Roger Stewart clothes, suits that should be expensive, but they're not.
Yes, bad things can happen to good people. Sometimes you don't even know how your credit score got knocked down, but there it is, an embarrassing blemish. Ick. Well, since First Capital Financial isn't just a mortgage broker, they're also the lender, they have their own money, which makes it a lot easier for you to get some, whatever your credit score or situation. Every day, First Capital Financial is helping people all over Southern California. They can help you, too. Give them a call, 866-355-6200. 866-355-6200.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows, I'll never forget.